Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Joe Okada back on the show. Joe is one of my all-time favorites. He's a super nice guy and a phenomenal angler. His tournament season has been super busy this year, so we've got a lot of fishing conversation to get caught up on. And Joe, he's always sharing juicy information, and this interview is no different. When you're done with the podcast, make sure you go on social media and find him at Joe Okada, Facebook or Instagram, or definitely YouTube. He's got some great YouTube videos up that are very educational as well. So anyways, let's get to it here on the JMO Podcast. We've got Joe Okada. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. If you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, I highly recommend you check out the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast that's put on by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, a phenomenal source of all kinds of topics happening at the Game and Fish Department throughout the seasons. For example, recent episode topics include pheasant crowing counts or the importance of outdoor education, also the state of the bighorn sheep, and of course, seasonal fishing topics are always happening. Again, if you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast is for you. You'll find it anywhere you'll find the JMO Podcast, and if you want a shortcut, you can find a link in the description. Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Tell me about all of it, the whole season as you remember it. Go ahead.
Sure. Thanks for having me back on, Taylor. It's been kind of a whirlwind, because the events were scheduled kind of back to back throughout the peak summer months. So it seemed like every week there was another event to get ready for. And that really made this summer fly by in a blink. And it started off a little rocky with head to head anyways. Started off with two or three losses back to back. And then turned it around mid-season and you know, was able to advance my way into the last shootout. But it was a fun year, even on the river. I've been playing in the AIM Rivers Division with Galen Bremer, and we've had some really good events over there too. So I've got to experience a whole mixture of different types of fishing, whether it's, you know, trying to pluck off individuals on Green Bay or Winnebago, or just waiting for the next willow cat bite on the Mississippi. I got to kind of do it all. And so it was a nice little buffet of fishing excitement this year, I guess you could say.
And you fished the AIM National Championship too, right? Over at, out of Duluth.
Oh my gosh. That was awesome. And I got to fish it probably a decade ago with Robert Blosser, because AIM had another shootout there back in 2010 or something. And all I could remember from that was it seemed like there was more water in the system then, And all we were doing was just, you know, flatlining spinners over the tops of weeds and catching what we could catch. I never got to see underwater. And this year when I went there and I had eyes underwater, it was a whole new world. And those fish were aggressive. They were not boat shy, and they were big, and it was an incredible few days of fishing. I will go back. I don't care if there's a tournament or not up there next year. I will go back up there and play, because that is a very special system that I only got to peek at some of it. So very cool. You know, if shallow water fishing is your thing, that's an amazing experience. Super cool.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of a funny thing to think about. You know, if you think about, you know, fishing tournaments or say you're going to go fish a tournament somewhere, the last time you were there competitively was 2010. I mean, that's like pre-side imaging, like, you know, any of all the, you know, that it was spot luck. Gosh, when did spot luck become a thing?
Yes.
It would have been close.
We were spot locking at that point, but no, we were still pulling planer boards then.
right. Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah. It's I don't know, man. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of silly. This day and age, the tech just moves so fast, and we talk about it all the time. It's like, man, oh man, that's not that long ago, but it's long enough ago that you got to question it a little bit. That's cool though.
It's not. But you know what's cool is being able to have lived and fished my way through the progression of technology from where we were to barely having a handheld GPS to now having what we have. I'm glad I got to, you know, work through these few decades of fishing to see that progression. Because if you're just jumping into it now, there's so much to be taken for granted about what you have at your disposal, from information resources to technology that's available if you want to use it. And I think there was some benefits along the way to at least develop the fundamentals, you know, and then being able to apply a lot of that to what we're able to leverage now. But on top of that, learning how much we truly didn't know. And so it's been able to give a lot of us a second life almost at fishing to re-experience so much again and experience that fun learning curve that drew us into the sport to begin with. So it's been a fun merry-go-round, I guess.
What are some of the things... What would be some of the things you could maybe think of, like concepts, strategy, just some of the theories and thoughts that have maintained, like, or maybe what are some of the really big ones that that you've had to let go of that were maybe hard to let go?
Yeah, well, the feedback loop has changed, or there's new elements in the feedback loop to let you come to more concrete conclusions. But before, when you finally hooked up with that fish on the spot that you thought you were going to hook up with, doing the presentation that you thought was most fit for that situation, and you finally connect, you're rewarded with that positive feedback. And now you're making educated assumptions about how it all came together. And when you're doing that, some of those educated guesses are wrong. If I roll up to my favorite rock pile and I make a cast with a paddle tail and I get bit on my second hop, I got bit. So I think, wow, yeah, that fish was tucked up in those rocks. So now I'm going to go look for some more of those rocks. What I didn't know is I had cast within 10 feet of a wolf pack of 30 of them. And yeah. And they were 7 feet off the bottom. And one of them was dumb enough to chase it down to the bottom and follow me for a couple hops and eat it. And now that I'm able to see what actually occurred, all of a sudden more light bulbs start popping off, and the confirmation is so solid that the confidence is, you know, reaches a higher level, because you're actually able to fully confirm everything that you were envisioning in your mind previously before you had it. That's really cool in a way. In another way, it's kind of sad, because you spent so much time developing that instinct and those educated guesses through all those different scenarios that keep playing out and start, you know, to pattern themselves out. But so much of that had just been washed away by fully understanding what's happening truly under the water at that given moment. And then, but there's so many positives that come along with it.
We know so much more now. It's almost reached a point where there's certain bodies of water, certain bites where, you know, to do well in a tournament, you're not even necessarily looking for the best spots or the best bite anymore. You're almost looking, you know, guys are to find their own fish that they don't have to share and give themselves a real, even a better chance to win in most cases. You're almost looking for a lesser than spot that has just enough bites of the right fish.
Yes. You know? And I was even doing that even before that. That's always been one of my things is I don't like to fish around other boats. So I would work twice as hard to find spots that are half as good that gave me a shot to do as good. And I was totally, I did that all right for a while. And that's still a major strategy today, but it's just harder to do now because people are not leaving any stones unturned anymore. They're not afraid to go look at things that don't make all the sense in the world. And so finding high potential spots that have low potential of actually getting looked at is becoming almost a thing of the past.
Yeah. 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 There'll be a full circle moment on that too. There's going to be some big, big tournament's going to get one on a community spot because it's not community anymore. Cause everybody gets so spread out, you know, and that's a good thing maybe too, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Talking about the head to head and I talked to Nicholas Kotowski, him and Andrew won it. You guys were the last two teams standing right at the championship. I kind of want to hear your version of that story, but before, you know, or as we get there, I kind of want to hear kind of what is the story of your journey getting into head to head and what you love about it and just sort of what your connection was to even get signed up. Cause it's quite a commitment. And as you said, you fish, the Rivers division, of the Ames over there in Wisconsin, like, you know, huge, huge commitment. So, I kind of want to hear how you got involved with it and what you like about it or why you decided to commit to it as kind of the starting point to this conversation.
To start at the start of the season, I still honestly had no idea what I was going to fish. Right now in my life, I have more commitments and more children than I ever did previously. And that, you know, I understand how much you have to sacrifice if you want to pursue the highest level of success in competitive fishing. And in order to do that, I'm not calling anybody that's at the top of their game a bad dad. But for me personally, I fully recognize that when I'm away and fully committed to pursuing the fisherman role, I'm not being as good of a dad as I could be. And that hits home really hard. And when my kids are, you know, 1 and 4 or 1 and 5 now, and I want them to have me around as much as possible. So one benefit to head to head was the tournaments were, you know, Fox Valley Central this year, where it was either Winnebago or Green Bay. And that's only 2.5 hours from my house to 4 hours, depending on where you drive. So, you know, honestly, after an event, I could still go home and get a half day of, you know, work in or be home to eat dinner with the family or whatever. And that was great. With a lot of the other tournaments, you're gone for almost 10 days at a crack, and you're hundreds and hundreds of miles away from home. And you just can't be, I couldn't just be there like I could before. So that was the logistics were one thing. Another big one was my brain works better when I'm competing alone. There's, you know, I find myself being able to jump on a gut instinct immediately. And And that's something that I struggle with when I'm ping-ponging ideas with another person in the boat. And that's one thing I recognized in 2021 when head-to-head had the PWS series, is I felt a better flow on the water of being able to just, you know, fish by the seat of your pants more and just be more in the moment with yourself and your own thoughts when it's just you and your own tunnel focus in the boat. And so I wanted to leverage that. And I asked Kyle and Brian if I could compete alone, and they go, yeah, you're going to be at a disadvantage a lot of times, especially if it's a numbers game. And these are cumulative events where every fish counts. And I said, I don't care. That's a challenge I want. And this would be a fun way to spend the year. So I decided to do that. And there was several times again this year where I felt that feeling come back about making the right moves, or just really tuning in. And in the blink of an eye, most of the times, most of the time you were just, I mean, the event went by so fast, and it was so enjoyable and so intense. And it's the best 4 hours of my week. It really is. It's the way after 2 years of doing it now, I've come to the conclusion that is my favorite way to fish a fishing tournament. And I honestly think it's just a matter of time before, hopefully head to head takes another step forward and wants to really make it a go at it. And if not, the tournament format will eventually mold to that. No matter how many people are kicking and screaming for other formats, there's still I think there's plenty of anglers that once they do it would be like, huh, yeah, it's a different ball game. And it really is. So those were the two main drivers for why I chose to fish the head to head this year. One, so I could be home, and two, so I could, fish just the way I want. But I'm not throwing any shade at team or co-angler events, because I've done all those and I still enjoy doing them. I've done a bunch of them this year, not co-angler events, but partner events. And I thoroughly enjoy those. It's just my brain works its best when it's just in its own little box. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's a phenomenal opportunity for you and the other teams. Yeah. It's so different, the live camera. So as a consumer, I love that. I can't get that anywhere else. And I don't even know everybody. This is something that I think is interesting too, is I'm not from over there. I'm over here in the Dakotas, but I'm paying attention to tournament fishing everywhere as best I can. Like I said, I'm a fan, and I get opportunities to interview people for the podcast and everything else. But probably half of the teams, if not more of the individuals in that head to head, that 10 teams on the head to head, watching it this year and last year, a lot of the teams, that was the first time kind of, learning who these individuals were, but it all makes sense. And maybe you can kind of expand on this. This is kind of an element that I think is kind of cool about this head to head as well, is that all those teams, regionally, everybody's a stick. Everybody was selected for a reason and has a heck of a resume in some way, shape, or form. Obviously, everybody's got experience on all those bodies of water. Like every week in and week out, there are no competition days off for any of the teams, because everybody's, there might be a little bit of home field advantage for some of you with a little bit more experience in certain places, but nobody's like ice cold anywhere.
No, they're not. This year the field was made up of full-time guides, full-time fishermen, and just really good, really, really solid anglers that understand both of those bodies of water really well. And going back to the viewing of how you like, or what you appreciate about viewing in real time, there's two different viewers of the live coverage that you're going to get. One is the student of the game, and they're watching boat movements, rod movements, lure selection, decision-making. You're able to watch and digest a lot of that in real time when people are in real pressure cookers and they have to pull out whatever stops they have to make their day turn around. And then you've got people like my, you know, my family and all my friends that get to tune in. It's funny, even in this head to head in the league event this year, I was getting texts from people from California to Boston, you know, and they don't even walleye fish, but they, you know, someone that they know or someone that they love could be fishing in that event. And so they have an emotional investment into seeing that person do well. And in a small field like that, where almost everybody's getting really solid airtime, especially if they're having a good day, finally people in their living rooms get to go along with the emotional roller coaster right along with you for that time. And that's really special. It means so much to my family to be able to, you know, see the day go instead of me just walking up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, for 20 seconds to put my bag on the scale. They got to see the whole day play out. And yeah. That's really special to me to be able to let them, if they choose to. My wife is the only exception. She'll pace a hole in the carpet for 4 hours watching if I'm not, you know, if I don't have a very big lead, but everybody else seems to enjoy the.
Interesting that you say, you know, the commitment to this league and the people that are running it and committed to it. Yeah, that is sort of like a side benefit that this in the digital world, that stuff's never going to go away. And, you know, your kids are 5 and 1, but when your grandkids are 5 and 1, they'll be able to watch it.
They will. And I think that's really cool.
Very cool. It's so very cool. And you know, you go for a day or two to pre-fish, you FaceTime home, but on competition day, it's only 4 hours, which the intensity of it all, I don't wish 8 hours upon you, any of you, because it's exhausting just to watch. You know, if I tune in and get the last hour and a half or whatever, cause that's how it works out a lot of times for me. I find myself getting a little bit worked up every once in a while because, you know, so I tell you that I watch it for, to learn and to see how people are operating and everything like that. But, you know, you'd be lying if the drama doesn't just naturally get to you because it's like, man, those fish catches, you know, it's just intense. But, you know, when I'm watching somebody make a decision on a body of water that they're familiar with. So I can kind of, in my own head, I can kind of relate to them when I think of when I'm on my own body of water, what are some of the things that I'm detailing to make my next decision? You know, there's going to be some crossover. There's definitely going to be some things that I can take from, you know, how they manage time, just how they're breaking down some of that water out loud, you know, to the camera. And they're talking about, you know, there's fish here. They're not biting, or, you know, there isn't as many, you know, what changed from yesterday's pre-fish till today and what that means for the next decision they make. And then it does or doesn't pay off. You know, like sometimes I got to go back and watch some of these things multiple times too, just to kind of put those pieces together. And maybe I'm being weird about it, but I think that there's a real opportunity there for the consumer.
Yeah, man, I'm going to go back and watch. I haven't watched a full episode yet from any of the events, but over the winter, you'd be foolish not to go back and watch it. It's like studying tape on you and studying tape on your opponents. And
100%.
And yeah. And the cool thing about the short event is, you know, I only needed a couple of days of practice because you only need 4 hours worth of moves and you don't need an entire 8 hours worth of moves. So as long as if I found just enough to keep me occupied for a few hours, I've said to myself, well, then that's good enough. Just make the most of it. You know, if it was, you just hope to come across enough fish so you can rack it up on the board fast enough. That's all. So,
yeah. I want to talk about that a little bit, in terms of strategizing for literally a 4 hour morning bite, 7 a.m. to 11, I think is what your guys' time frame was, right?
Yep.
As we get farther down the rabbit hole, I do want to talk more specifically how the bites were, what the weather conditions were, you know, all those things that did probably play in. But big picture, strategizing for a 4 hour kind of a, you know, 1v1 you know, head-to-head matchup, right? Like the name would say, keep repeating that. But a head-to-head matchup, you got 4 hours to do it. I kind of want to know, you know, every, you know, in more detail what you just said. Like, how much pre-fish seemed appropriate this season, you know, from week to week? You know, how did you kind of refine sort of your strategy? And I'm really curious, how do you, you know, even in one day of pre-fish and looking at all the years of experience that you have, I was really impressed with you and many other anglers, how versatile you still were inside that 4 hours and were willing to make moves that, you know, I would need like, you know, 3 days of reading up on to make a decision, like, you know, to give myself confidence to make a move in the last hour or 2 hours, whatever. So I'm kind of curious about that, strategizing for these events and not getting overwhelmed with, you know, with everything and having too much going on.
Yeah. If those were my home bodies of water, sometimes when you condense it into that short of a time frame, you know too much, because then your mind wants to be in 17 different places at once. And only once did I feel that overwhelming feeling of I don't know if this is good enough. I wish I could be in this and that place right now to know for sure if this is where I need to be. But I didn't have that much lockdown. And so that was almost good, because then you can fully exhaust what you have in front of you. And based on what you're seeing at that moment, then you can just say, you know what, it's time for a total reconfiguration here. And that worked out fine. One strategy that I did have was, I love to fish weeds, and typically, you know, especially early summer, you know, the most change you're going to see from day one to the next day is they're going to grow a little bit more, and that's about it. And if the potential weed growth isn't overwhelming and the weather wasn't too drastic of a change, you can almost count that you can go back there and the life will still be hanging around those weeds. And they're usually pretty bitey in there, as opposed to just hoping that a rock pile has a wolf pack come up on it at just the right time when you need him to be there. Those are good playgrounds for a cumulative event. Not so much if it was to bring in your five biggest, but strategies have to change at that point. But when you just need as many bites per hour as possible, shallow water and weeds is where I wanted to find fish. And if they weren't there, then I'd move around and play on adjacent stuff. But that's stuff that I really tried to make happen in practice. And I'd spend 1 or 2 days of practice before each event just to test the waters and see how life was shaping up. You know, like I went to Bagel, for example, 1 week, rock pot, every bit of juicy rock you went to had some catchable fish on it. And then 1 week later, it was just all sheephead that everywhere you looked, and everything had changed. And so that was your cue to migrate to a different pattern. But all I need is a taste in practice of something, and then you just try to expand on it when the time comes. And don't try to lock everything down and find, you know, when I'm practicing for other tournaments, like when I was practicing for NWTs and stuff, I'd really try to refine things so that there was no time wasted at coming to the best conclusion of what that spot or pattern had to offer you. And so I'd spend extra time mapping areas and extra time, you know, studying where I got bit and why I got bit there, and then analyzing my presentations to make sure that I really had that as fine tuned as possible. And for this one, it was just, well, there's a bunch of fish living in there, and I'll figure out what they want to eat when the time comes. So it's two different mindsets that I found myself doing. I think I like the other one where you just, You see an area that has potential, and you just say to yourself, I'll figure it out when I get there. You know, it's almost better that way, because then you're not totally, you haven't completely locked yourself into something that may or may not work the next day. So I really enjoy that. But yeah, weeds are one of my favorite things. If I can find a walleye in less than 6 feet of water and there's some weeds and some rock around, that is my ultimate playground. I love that more than anything.
The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. If you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, I highly recommend you check out the North Dakota Outdoors podcast that's put on by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, a phenomenal source of all kinds of topics happening at the Game and Fish Department throughout the seasons. For example, recent episode topics include pheasant crowing counts or the importance of outdoor education, also the state of the bighorn sheep, and of course, seasonal fishing topics are always happening. Again, if you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, the North Dakota Outdoors podcast is for you. You'll find it anywhere you'll find the JMO podcast, and if you want a shortcut, you can find a link in the description. Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Or like, how often did this come up in your head about, you know, going into a tournament day where you've got, you know, 4 hours in the morning head to head? How often was it where you maybe had to make a decision if you were going to go with a big fish pattern or a numbers or try to split the difference? Like, how did you sort of, like, how did those conversations happen in your head, given the situations, given the locations? Or maybe it happened every single time, but where do you feel like it was like the most meaningful?
It's all about, for head to head, it's all about encounter frequency. So if you're running into 10 potential bites an hour of 1.5 pounders or 3 bites an hour of 3 to 5 pounders, and one pattern you're anticipating is going to be more, is more likely to hold for the next day when you get there. Those are huge factors. You know, you look ahead at the wind. So you try, basically, I would look at the weather ahead of time and anticipate where I would be able to, you know, effectively fish, and then try to just find the best biomass of worthy fish possible. The bigger, the better. But if they were small, I didn't care at all. And that's, you know, that's one of the cool things. It's a different mindset and a different discipline in five fish, big fish tournaments. You have to put your blinders on to lots of walleyes that aren't going to help your cause. Cause if you get distracted by them, you're literally wasting your tournament away. And in head to head, if I see a walleye in front of me, I'm going to try and catch that thing.
Yeah.
I don't care how big it is. If it's a sitting duck and it looks like it's going to be a layup, I am casting at that sucker. And that is so fun, because then I'm not saying, oh, that only looks like a 21 incher. I need the 24s. So I'm just going to not try to catch a fish. I'm going to try and put that on the board. And I just love to catch fish. So this is a fun way to do it. I wouldn't mind having them get creative with their format, where sometime, you know, for a portion of it or an entire event, you know, they bounce back and forth between big fish and numbers. But I think as long as the majority of the field is putting up worthy fish with enough action to keep the audience engaged, their cumulative format is probably the way to go. So there's always something going on. If it's just people staring at their screen waiting for, you know, one of the broodstock to show up and to cast at, it might get kind of boring. But if people are usually hooked up, and you know, leads are being overtaken and guys are racking up weight, that's usually the more exciting way for viewership wise, you know. But if you're, so as a competitor, yeah, that's what I would do. I would first, I want to know what are my most likely spots where I'm getting the most bites per hour or most encounters per hour that I could hope to convert to bites. And then based on that, which pattern has the most shoulders, so that each bite really adds up on the leaderboard to start accumulating weight. Usually I would end up leaning on, you know, what you would call nurseries, you know, just not the biggest fish in the system, but they were plentiful and they were competitive with each other. And I could try to, you know, whittle as many fish away per hour as possible. Sometimes it worked and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, I think that's another one of those things that is relatable to, you know, for me to learn. And I'm really trying to decide, you know, what you guys are doing that I can get, you know, that I can take from it. Watching somebody operate to just try to get the five biggest bites in a day versus, you know, when you guys are just like hyper intensely making decisions to get the most encounters and get the most bites. That's pretty much exactly what I do when I go fun fishing or bring my family fishing. So there's something relatable there too, to a slightly more casual viewer as well, if that makes any sense.
I'll tell you what though, I have the utmost respect for guys like, I'll throw Tom Wynn for an example. You know, he has the willpower and the mindset and the confidence in his abilities to go to literally ignore 90% of the population, 95% of the fish population yeah. That lake, so that he can optimize his chances with the ones that he truly needs. And I challenge anybody to go out on their home body of water and say, I ain't making a cast until I see the one fish that's going to make my day. And I bet you 85% of the people that go out and say and declare that that's their goal for the day, you know, an hour into their day, they're going to cast at a 4-pound fish or 3-pound or small fish just to feel that tug. And yeah. I'm no different. You have to fight with every inch of your being to not make that cast. And that is so difficult. And that discipline and that mindset that guys like him have are true separators for other people that would be competing against him. I mean, it is so impressive to be able to withhold every fiber saying, catch that fish. It's it's right there for you. Just catch it. It'll be fun. And then you keep on moving.
Yeah.
And, I have a lot of respect for the anglers that have been able to, you know, work, adopt that mindset, because that is no easy task.
Yeah, it's a skill, 100%. And put in that situation, like a no call tournament, and you can only have a few in the live well or whatever. You know, you're one of those guys too that you know live and well how to operate that way. I know you do. But talking about that head to head, it is cool. It is cool that it's different, and it's a cool opportunity with the live camera in the boat to be able to watch that. Now I want to get into the fishing a little bit while we still have a few minutes.
All right.
And I wouldn't mind hearing sort of your story of how the tournament went, the championship, or I guess I don't know how you guys speak on it. Is it the tournament? Is it the championship? Is it the bracket? Like the playoff? I guess the playoff is probably the term end there.
I think the first day was a playoffs. The second day was a championship. But I went up there with 3 days of I wanted to give myself 3 days because you had pretty much all of Michigan waters to fish. Big Bay, Little Bay, you know, upper Little Bay, lower Little Bay. You had all the entire West Shore down to Cedar River. There was so much to look at. And I got there on a Saturday. The tournament was on Tuesday. It was blowing 30 miles an hour and must have rained 3 inches on me that day. I didn't even get out until halfway through the day. So I kind of laid up in the upper bay where I cut my teeth on Green Bay 20 something years ago, fishing Little Bay Tanaka's in that upper bay. And I'm very comfortable around those reefs and I just wanted to see what kind of open water potential was there and how much life was living in those weeds. So I got about 4 hours in up there the first day. It was miserable, but I found lots of fish, just nothing over 3 pounds. But I left that day saying, well, if I don't find anything else, at least I can just try to be as efficient as I can and 1 pound my way to the finish line. And then the next day came and it was blowing again, but it was blowing out of the south. And I've got a couple areas over on the West Shore that when there's a south wind that's really blowing, fish will stack up and at least expose themselves. So even if I wasn't catching them at will, I just wanted to see what kind of life was set up on some of these rocks. Most of them were shallow, I'd say 8 to 15 feet. And then I saw them. I saw way more fish than I did in the upper bay, and I caught them pretty good. You pretty much a 1-2 approach. It was either just a jig and a worm or casting a search bait, and I could get fish to commit pretty easily on either one. And I was just, so I spent, after I saw them there, I just kind of hopped around to look for secondary stuff in case things got busy. And I found stuff there too. And I was able to kind of fine tune a couple of things on my search baits so that I knew that everything was right. And one thing that I played around with this week is I grabbed a 9-2 snare casting rod from JT Outdoor Products. With a low profile baitcaster reel spooled with 12 pound mono. And I was able to get away with slightly heavier search baits in that shallower water, but the thicker diameter of that 12 pound mono was enough that I could really tame down my retrieve and generate more lift at slower speeds. So I was, even in that heat, even in that 25 mile an hour south wind that we had that day, I was able to bomb, 120 to 150 foot casts into the wind and snipe it, snipe fish before they even knew I was around them. And so I felt like I had an edge presentation wise going into it that maybe other guys weren't on. And I'm telling you, I got enough footage where I'm going to put together a video on that system, but it is legit. And I think more people are going to be doing it once they see how all the benefits of it. But that's just a general rundown of the presentation. So come tournament day, I go to the spot where I saw the mother load and there was 4 boats on it and my heart sank. And one was the Katowskis and another one was a boat that had 90 pounds off of it 4 hours later. But I didn't want to go stare at 4 boats and cast at fish that I wonder if they got messed with or not. So I just went to some secondary stuff and caught just enough to make it to the next round. And then for the afternoon round, I was able to go touch some rock that I hadn't messed with all day. And I knew there'd be some fresh, hungry suckers on there. And I was able to wear those fish out with those 2 presentations to be able to make it to the next day. But I think it was kind of a blessing in disguise that my strategy was, if I don't have to go to those spots that I really want to go to, save them for when my back's really against the wall. And, thankfully I was able to hold that spot, in my back pocket until I really needed it. But it faded quicker than I thought it did. Honestly. I mean, those fish got really funny, pretty quick, schools broke up, halfway through the match, I was just casting an individual fish 'cause they'd separated it off, but they were still milling around some of the stuff that I wanted to fish. So that was, it all worked out to be good enough, but it wasn't enough to keep up with the freight train Kotelski brothers on that juice for the next day. They were just, that's where the mother load was. And I wasn't going to go there and, you know, rain on their parade on the next day after I never even showed my face there the first day. So, but it was cool, man. Really cool experience. I'll tell you what, that afternoon match with Eric McCoy and Steve Labs, was the highlight of my year, because I know what a well-oiled machine those guys are. They pretty much could go out and catch 100 pounds of Green Bay walleye at will.
Oh man. Yeah.
Every event. And they were, honestly, I figured they would just walk their way to there. Even as we departed the parking lot for round two, I said, I feel like a sheep getting led to slaughter here. But I'll, that was some of the most fun back and forth, rack 'em up, quality fish, crappy weather. I mean, it was just a fight on everything the whole time, whether it was maintaining boat control or getting fish that are getting harder to catch to bite, and seeing them just rack up 10-pound gain after 10-pound gain. And you know, just when you think you're catching up, they're another 10-pound. It was so I can't even, unless you get to experience that yourself, there, I can't even articulate how intense that was. And so I that was the highlight match of the whole season for me, was to be able to keep up with those guys, because their efficiency is off the scale. They're both excellent anglers. They can get those Green Bay fish to fire, and that was so rewarding. So and I really like Eric too. Eric's one of the good guys in competitive walleye fishing, in my opinion. You know, he lets his fishing do the talking.
Yeah,
and those are the guys that I have a lot of those are the guys that I like to root for in their events. So it was a really cool one. And then the Kotelskis, I was so happy for them too. When I used to go up there guiding way back when, their parents owned a motel up there that I would stay at. So when I would run in to check in, there'd be the Kotelski brothers fighting in the living room, chasing each other around. And then as he got older, we even snuck out together one night, and that I had to call off a trip due to weather, and we still decided to go out and we caught some bigs. And I still remember all that. It just a really, really good group of guys. And I'm really thankful that I got, you know, to play with all those guys. There's no drama all year, no complaining, nothing. Just dudes that wanted to go out fishing, and they're good at fishing, and there was good matches. That's all there was this year, and it was so refreshing. Very cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, getting back to, you know, all these teams are kind of selected, you know, as kind of specialists on these bodies of water where there's no days off. And then when you're in the playoff, you know, where it's, you know, win, move on, lose, go home. Yeah. Like your semifinal match against McCoy and Labs was so phenomenal. Yeah. Like anybody that like, people would have to be in that situation to experience it, to know what kind of a rush that would be. Like competitively, they were putting it together most of that match and were staying just an arm's reach ahead of you. And then in the last hour of the fourth quarter, you know, you shrink it down even more. It was like the last like 30 minutes of that match was when some real magic happened for you, and you pulled ahead and you won.
I believed, and I really meant, I even said it on camera, I truly believed that he was just watching his score tracker, and he's like, Okada caught one. Let's catch another one. I thought he was on such a mother load after his after their morning that they had. I thought they were just catching just enough so that they didn't burn any additional fish they didn't need to burn for the following day. That's because every time I caught one, I looked down and it was like, they just caught, they just added 10 pounds to their total.
Yeah.
I swear I just looked at this 20 seconds ago, and they were here, and now they're here, and this happened again and again. I honestly thought they were just in fish preservation mode, just making sure that they only caught what they needed to catch. And then when it finally started to pull away, and I didn't, and you know, their weight didn't keep up, I was like, no way, no way. So that just goes to show how highly I believe in their abilities. Is just, I mean, I could totally see him being smart about his fish management in that, in those regards. And just teasing me the entire time. But no, that's, that's really how it happened. The wind for the most part was, we started out, I don't know, with some 4-footers. And then on Green Bay, you get fours, and then you get some, you know, three sisters that come along, and they're the big ones. And so they'll catch you off guard. And it's always right when you're about to make your layup on a fish that the three sisters appear and throw your boat off course. But they started to build more and more as the day went on. Then finally a big storm system came through, and that came, I don't know, there must have been 30 to 50 mile an hour gusts momentarily. But then when it subsided, I was left with very fishable water. I was even able to downsize my jigs for the last, you know, half hour or so. And at that point in time, Eric was further to the east of me. I believe that that storm squall caught up with him at the tail end of that day, which made his fishing more difficult at the very end and mine a little bit easier at the very end. And that little window of time where the fish were still there and they were up and poised and ready to eat still, I made a move, I don't know, with 45 minutes to go, and I got to spend that last half hour on some fresh fish that were willing to bite, and that's all there was to it. So
walk me through that decision. Walk me through, like, if there's a backstory, like you had a waypoint, a memory, or you were just trying to find some fresh fish and you went somewhere blind. Walk me through that decision at the end of that semifinal match on this year's playoff. Like, and anybody that wants to fill in the gaps or like experience this, just look it up online, go to the head-to-head website or whatever, wherever, yeah, YouTube or whatever, just do some research and go find this match. Watch all of them, watch the whole season, watch everybody. I'm all for that. But like this particular decision that you made was really impactful to me, man. Like I was watching it. Like I was watching it when you were down by whatever 17 with, or 14 or whatever, I'm getting those numbers wrong, but it was something like that. You were down by about 15 pounds or something like that with less than an hour to go. And it's raining on you, or the rain was just getting done. Give me the whole backstory and everything that kind of went into that decision in terms of where you were at, what you were experiencing with your fish, and where you decided to move to and why, and how that all worked out in hindsight.
The fish I was on that I had been, that the fish that I had left alone for the first match, hoping that it would give me an advantage come the second match. Like I said, those schools were all busted up, you know, less than 2 hours into that match of the afternoon. And so now when you're dealing with stragglers or twosies or maybe threesies, it was harder to creep up on them. Because it seemed like they were already on guard, and as it got later and later, and I'm that far behind, I just was doing the math in my head, you know, like my conversion rate and the amount of fish that I'm seeing is not enough. I can't piece it together in time. So it was just a last ditch effort. I ran about a mile and a half away, and just sat down on an area that I didn't even fish in practice. I just came through with my trolling motor, saw a couple packs of fish and said, there's some life here. Hope, you know, it's a back pocket spot if I need it. And I hadn't seen anybody touch it all day. I said, if they're still there, there's going to be 3 to 5 good bites there and I can go get them. But I got to give myself enough time to figure out how they're set up for this day and get them. And as soon as I put the trolling motor down, as soon as I panned to the right, there was a good little wad of them. And I was like, oh my God, they're here. So, I ended up catching a couple 6-pounders out of that school, and it saved the day. But it was just, it was a desperation move. Honestly, I just knew that I couldn't hang with their rate where I was just dying a slow death. And I didn't want to sit there with my hands in my pocket the last half hour, looking at stubborn fish and go down that way. So I just picked up and looked for some fresh dumb ones. And thank goodness I found them in the last little bit there. That's really all it was, is, you know, I think if there was more time on the clock, one of my biggest problems is staying on fish, trying to force it to happen too often and not just being free to, you know, one thing, like in 2021, something happened that year where I could just bounce and go and zig and zag and not care. And it paid off more often than not, but I have a really hard time doing that. And but then when you're faced with, you know, a live scoreboard and you can see the time ticking away, it puts enough pressure on you where you just make your move, you know, and you deal with it, and you don't second guess it. You just do it. And that sometimes it works and sometimes you fall really short. But you were obviously
comfortable with that. You were comfortable knowing, like anybody watching would understand, that you were making a big swing. You were making a bit of a Hail Mary move. And, you know, anybody would have completely understood what you were doing, even if you had not gotten another bite and crashed and burned, that you didn't want to die on a hill that you was a certain death.
That's right.
And you were going to make some kind of, you weren't going to let them off that easy. This time it worked out and made it special. Do you feel like if you were going to fish, like a 2-dayer, you know, live weigh-in, you know, like the, you know, the standard, like NWTs now, you know, the way that they're still set up, whatever. Do you feel like you would fish those differently now with your head-to-head experiences with these shorter matches and these really intense, sort of intensified moments like that?
I would try my best, but what happens in those is you start the day, and assuming you didn't make a 150-mile boat run somewhere, you've got all the time in the world to pace yourself at a bite an hour. And when you settle into accepting the fact that you may only have one of the right encounters an hour, you keep your patient pants on, and you don't try to force the day to fold to your wishing, because you've got the time. It's not till after about the noon bells start going off, and if things aren't going to plan, that's when the pressure starts. And no matter how you try to rewire your brain for that first half of the day, it's still, I'm not saying it's relaxed, it's very intense, but you feel like you've got more time to let the day come to you, you know?
Sure.
But when you've only got, when you're starting at the noon buzzer and the other guys are catching 20 pounds an hour, it's like, you don't even have time to take a step back, and it's just go, you know, it's just go, go, go. And yeah. It's a different type. And I think I'm a procrastinator by nature. And I think that plays into, you know, how I play out my days. If I feel like I have the time in my head, then my pace slows down a little bit. But when I know my back's up against the wall and there's not a minute to spare, It's like you've been waiting on that project for a week, and the deadline is tomorrow, and you got to get it done. It's the same kind of pressure that you apply to yourself to make something happen on the water. So, I think it's just to different tournaments, different strategies, different mindsets, and you spend, you know, the goal is to spend a couple of days of practice to put yourself in the right mindset so that you're ready to bob and weave when the time comes in the tournament, you know.
Yeah, this will be like my closer. If we spend a couple of minutes, I want to revisit something that you brought up. I planned on asking you about this. You brought it up earlier, talking about throwing the bait caster and your that setup. That's very creative. That's very thoughtful. It has both of those elements of creativity and sort of outside of the norm for most walleye anglers that are casting. But it when you say it, it's like, obvious. Like it's like, that's very practical. That makes all the sense. I'm curious about expanding on that or anything else, any other little juicy sort of, creative creations from this year or just things that have paid off for you, you know, recently, like that, you know, the 12 pound test mono on a low profile baitcaster for shallow water, heavier jigs, getting the lift, you know, getting the retrieve you're looking for. Like, you obviously really dialed that in. Anything else like that or that in more detail that you could offer?
Yeah. If you know, I wanted, my goal was to be able to just that the heavier the search bait you use, the more accurate your casts are and the better distance you have. So I knew that good wind was there was the potential for some really good wind. So I wanted to try to be able to make fish bite on heavy search. You know, I'm only talking like, you know, half to 5/8 ounce search baits. And you know, you can adjust resistance with different size propeller blades, you know, different amounts of worm, retrieve speeds, line diameter. There's so many variables that can impact your retrieve. So it's kind of, you can kind of pick the variable that you want to tweak to make it your own. But one thing you could do is just take three of the same search baits and then have three rods on deck with, you know, 8, 10, 12 or 10, 12, 15 or whatever you want. So that when you see a fish at a different part of the water column, or the fish changes moods where they need a slower or quicker retrieve to get them to finally commit, because they're notorious for just following that and then disengaging. And that means that something you did, a movement or something you did, wasn't quite to their liking. And all of a sudden you make one change, you know, you go up to a little bit heavier line, so you're able to crawl it a little bit slower. And all of a sudden you start hooking up cast after cast. That's that one variable that you could have changed. So, don't just settle for a lure out of the package. Figure out how to optimize that bait to do what it takes to get the fish's full commitment. And it doesn't matter if it's a search bait or a jig or a crankbait or anything, there's something you can tweak to make it behave differently that might generate a better response out of that fish. And if you start thinking deeply about controlling or adjusting all those variables based on the feedback that the fish are giving you on the sonar, you can really turn your day around. And then that's something that I do all the time. I mean, I'm hoping that someday a walleye tournament organization goes back to artificial only, because I'm working on artificial presentations with artificials that will probably give me an advantage, at least temporarily, if that ever starts again. And I'm always working on that. So maybe someday it'll happen, maybe it won't. It's hard to beat a heartbeat, you know, for sure, day in, day out, to get fish to commit. But whenever I go out to practice mechanics or to work through different techniques, I am always trying stuff with artificials to figure out that silver bullet that it's going to take for different conditions to get them to bite artificials. And that's it's satisfying and rewarding. And I think it's something that anybody that likes to geek out on that kind of stuff, I hope that they're also doing the same thing in their garage at 2 o'clock in the morning when they can't sleep and have to think about a new way to tweak something, because that's what gets my wheels turning, is messing around with that kind of stuff. But just because we can see fish doesn't mean we can make them open their mouths. And controlling and altering variables within presentations to optimize their performance is something that I would hope, under, you know, working through those things would give you a competitive edge, you know, more often than not.
So with a search bait, like, what do you feel like is the adjustment? Like, when it's not just your standard most natural retrieve, like, I'm like generalizing here, like for myself, let's just assume that everybody kind of has a very similar, like, general retrieve with a search bait. When it's Green Bay or anywhere that you've been, if an adjustment has to be made, what is there a pattern to that? Is it typically a slower retrieve? Is it a raise it? Is it a let it fall? Like when adjustments are made with the search bait, what have been the more meaningful from, say, just the standard straight medium retrieve right over their head.
I think one of the main things that you got to remember is the delivery itself. And if your delivery is pinpoint, if the way you deliver it initially to get their interest, that's one of the most important things on making sure that 10 seconds later or 5 seconds later, they're ready to commit to it. If you're way off or you're sloppy on your delivery, which changes too. Fish, it depends on if fish are packed up, tucked in a boulder, you know, right underneath the surface. Depending on where they're positioned, your delivery on that fish is what's going to make or break the success of that encounter more often than not. And so instead, yes, you can worry about all the little intricacies of your tackle and all that stuff. But if you're not making the perfect layup on that fish, you're destroying your opportunity to leverage everything else that you've done to make it successful. And I think that's one of the things that you'll start to see is, you know, it might not be the perfect color, it might not be the perfect weight, it might not be coming across at the right speed, but if you catch that fish's attention and it doesn't have to work hard to engage on it, I mean, your chances of getting that fish in the boat is so much higher than taking all the perfect stuff, making a sloppy cast, and then hoping for the best. So I would say delivery is the number one factor. And then, like I said, that changes. Their mood changes, whether it creeps up on them from behind or drops on their head or comes up off the bottom or goes down a ledge or doesn't splash too hard if it's a high rider and spook. There's all the things to just maximize that initial, the minute it recognizes its presence. Where is it in relation to that fish when it recognizes that presence? And that delivery is the crucial part about getting every good commitment you can to go. So,
Joe, thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Sounds good. Thanks, Taylor. See ya.